Professor Andrew Cleland at the University of California, Santa Barbara, has a research goal to try to build the first quantum computer. Mm-hmm. And what he has done as a breakthrough in science is to build a paddle-shaped resonator. It is no longer than a human hair. He cooled it down to its lowest energy state that is known as a quantum ground state, very near absolute zero. And then he wanted to see in that quantum state, ground state, could they control a tiny measure of vibrational energy that physicists call a phonon, so that the paddle resonator could be vibrated a little and a lot at the same time. The tiny paddle is made of a thin film of aluminum nitride that is sandwiched between aluminum layers. And after it's cooled down to 1/200th of a degree above absolute zero, it became the first quantum machine in the macro world to demonstrate quantum behavior of being in two states at once. And the problem is, how do you then measure that the paddle is behaving quantum mechanically? And how do you measure it without causing the waveform collapse to a specific state that destroys the delicate quantum state? Well, Professor Cleland used a phonon, which is a quantum unit of mechanical vibration, sort of like if you pluck a violin string, it will vibrate and you can hear that sound, that tone, because there are trillions of phonons released from a plucked violin string. Well, imagine in his lab, if you could bring it down so quiet, so cold, so still, that they could hear one phonon on a specially built superconducting quantum circuit. That's what they did. And the single acoustical phonon could be heard and could be manipulated into a quantum state where the paddle either half the time would have that phonon vibration and half the time it would not. The act of measuring forced the paddle to be in either one state or the other, and that is a quantum superposition state like the famous Schrodinger's cat thought experiment, where the cat is both alive and dead in a box of all quantum states until the lid is opened and the consciousness looks in and sees if the cat is dead or alive. Well, recently I talked with Professor Andrew Cleland about his breakthrough of creating the first quantum machine in the macro world that could be controlled in superposition of two vibrating states at the same time. Here now is Professor Andrew Cleland from UC Santa Barbara.
We could put the paddle in a state where it was both vibrating, so it had one phonon, and it did not have one phonon at the same time. And that's a superposition state.
Which is like Schrodinger's cat that is dead and alive at the same time.
That's right. It's a very, very simple analog of Schrodinger's cat. And then we could measure it and see that the paddle either half the time it would have that vibration, half the time it wouldn't. And our act of measuring it would force it to be in either one state or the other.
Now, how do you take this breakthrough and scale it up? So if I understand, what you're trying to do is come up with a quantum computer that would be working with this vibrational superposition. And I'm not sure exactly how to apply that to the zeros and ones.
You probably at home have one of these light switches where there are two switches that control one light bulb, you know, maybe in two different locations in your house. Both switches maybe have to be on for the light to go on. If both switches are off, then the light is off. Let's say your two light switches are bits in a classical computer. So they're either ones or zeros. They're either on or off. And the light is the result of the computation that you're doing with these two light switches.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're both on, the light is on. If either one of them is off, the light is off.
Okay.
So you can do a very, very simple computation with those two light switches, where only if they're both on, in other words, they're both equal to one, will the light switch be on. There are four possible configurations. You can have the first light switch off, the second light switch off. That's one computation, and the result is the light is off. Another computation you can do is the first light switch on, the second light switch off, and the result is the light is off. Do a third computation, first off, second on, the light is off, and the final computation is both on, in which case the light is on. And you can do those four computations one after the other. And so you could do all four computations in maybe 4 seconds. And a classical computer like a laptop essentially does that, except for it has a whole bunch of these light switches, and it can change the light switches extremely fast, maybe a billion times a second. And that's what a classical computer does. Now, in a quantum computer, let's go back to our two light switches and our light bulb. In a quantum computer, the switches can be both on and off at the same time. And so you can do the four computations that I described to you, you can do all of them at the same time, say 1 second, because you can have the switches in both on and off positions at the same time, and the light bulb will be both on and off at the same time. But by looking at the light bulb, you force the system into one of the possible outcomes.
You are confronted with a quantum computer that is looking at everything on and off, all possibilities at the same time.
Yeah.
Why is it that you wouldn't get all possibilities of answers all the time?
Very good question. And you do. So when you look at the answer, you will get some result. But when you look at the answer, quantum mechanics says you can then also look at the switches and figure out what the result was. So you might say that's not very useful.
Right. It's like you have to have the macro world as a reality check on your quantum calculations.
That's right. So now what you can do in principle is you can scale up this two light switches and one light bulb to thousands of switches and thousands of light bulbs that you put into all possible states at the same time, and you push your go button, and in 1 second it does a million calculations all at the same time. Now, you might say, what's the good of that? You then have to look at each one to figure out what the answer is. Quantum computers are being built to factor very, very large numbers. Okay, so I can write down a number that has 500 digits in it. And if that number is not prime, I can factor it into its primes.
Mm-hmm.
And if I do this with a classical computer and a 500-digit number, and I want to factor it into its primes, it might take me a year to do that. With a quantum computer, somebody figured out that even though you're limited by this measurement process, you can factor that number extremely quickly in a time that's much, much shorter than what a classical computer can do. So the quantum computer will spit out some, let's say the number you're trying to factor is the product of two prime numbers. So it spits out two numbers. You can then immediately check very easily whether those two prime numbers multiplied together are your answer. It's very hard to find those prime numbers, but it's very easy to check if they're correct or not. So why is it interesting to factor very large prime numbers? The reason is that right now, the best cryptographic system that's available and is heavily used by banks and by governments and by military is what's called prime number factorization. It's the best encryption system. So what people do is that they take two prime numbers, they multiply them together, and they get a huge number that's not prime, and they use that huge number to encrypt their information. They then transmit the information to a friend who has one of the prime numbers, and he can then decrypt it. And this is how banks, governments, and the military communicate pretty much worldwide, an almost unbreakable system. And if you continually change your prime numbers, it's very hard for anybody to crack it. If somebody can build a quantum computer with all that it promises to be, that decryption can then occur in real time. That would mean that all of the encryption that's used by banks, by governments, and by the military would be crackable. And that would mean that there's no way to transmit information in a really encrypted fashion.